Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think it's going to be the greatest atmosphere at any boxing event I've ever witnessed. You know, certainly in my lifetime. And I'm so pleased for her as well.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome to episode 137 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan, Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack as well. Reminder as well, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm very well, Judy.
As we record this, it is Friday, so we're going to recap on days 1, 2, and 3 of Royal Ascot. 100 Royal Ascot winners for trainer Aidan O'Brien. Not much else needs to be said, really, Johnny.
No, you know, I just felt this was utterly perfect for the 100 to be brought up, because there's no race, I feel, at Ascot, and there aren't many races, full stop, that really resonate with punters who mightn't necessarily have an interest in the flat day today, but kind of half follow it. And punters who do follow the flat in Britain and Ireland as the Ascot Gold Cup. And, you know, the likes of Yates being such a legend in the race, Aidan's ability to sort of train him to peak every day. And the race year in, year out, how it's been just such a brilliant race to watch. And for Aidan to bring up the 100, beating John Gosden, who's been kind of having a pop at the Derby, and Ballydoyle Coolmore in recent times, beating Godolphin, with whom Coolmore has had obviously deep, deep rivalry over the years, and doing it with the favourite in one of the best finishes you're going to see, Scandinavia. Ryan Moore riding as well as he'll ever ride, really, in a race. Everything was perfect about it. It was a magical, magical Ascot Gold Cup to light up what's been a great Ascot for 2026 so far.
What is the secret of Aidan O'Brien, Johnny? Because you know him, you've been to Coolmore many times, as have I. What do you think the deal is?
I would say it's probably down to one word, really. He's just absolutely obsessed. I think he's totally obsessed. I would say he, you know, ever since he got an interest in horses through his father, I would say there was never ever going to be another path for him. He had a family, by the standards of today anyway, he had a family relatively early in his life, such that, you know, Aidan doesn't seem old at all, and he's a trainer son in his 30s, and another trainer son in his 20s, and trainer son in his 30s who's doing amazing things, two daughters as well who've done well in life. So he married Anne-Marie, who's Anne-Marie Crowley would have been Joe's daughter. So kind of, you know, was basically married into a racing family. So is a family man, and has sort of had that ticked off in his life much, much earlier than other people, and has been able to, I suppose, focus on training horses for the biggest operation in the world in Coolmore. And I've said this before, I think Aidan's a difficult enough person to really get a handle on, because he's quite unique. I always go back to the interview he gave, I think, with Roisin Ingall in the Times years ago, where he said that his toothbrush has to be facing a certain way when he leaves it there before he goes to bed. And I feel that strikes at somebody who has certain characteristics that are to do with perfection, to do with an inability to kind of focus on things that aren't right, or an inability to be happy about things that aren't right, to ultimately be totally, totally, totally in pursuit of perfection. And after the 100th Royal Ascot winners, you know, his stable jockey now, Ryan Moore, was asked about it, and he said he's probably thinking of the next 100 already. That could be misconstrued. So what Ryan was kind of alluding to is the fact that this doesn't matter to him. Aidan O'Brien, I find him hard to get a handle on beyond the really nice exterior and the good man that he's always been to my company, and the good man that he comes across as. But I feel for him, you know, individual accolades, individual prizes, individual honours are almost irrelevant. Like, he will enjoy it as part of the team. But, you know, I've spoken to him before about previous Guineas winners, you know, say the Irish Guineas, whatever, and he'd barely be able to name half of them. No, he just, what he's done in the past isn't relevant. It's about the horses right now and having that ability to be able to get up in the morning, go out and see the horses, work the horses. He'll be around horses until he's in the grave, basically. And he is struck by genius. I do feel, you know, I don't know whether you believe in the spirituality of possible reincarnation or what makes human beings have a unique relationship with animals. And I've seen it myself with a young child, how animals and particularly horses can do this. They can be really, really clever when it comes to human beings. They can see a baby and be very tender around that baby. And there is a special relationship between some people and horses, and Aidan O'Brien has that. And it's his attention to detail. He's an absolutely obsessive about this game, and extremely humble, like extremely, extremely humble. He's training 30 odd years. I've never heard him once give himself one crumb of praise, not one. It's never about him. It's about, you know, obviously the pressures of the operation, but it's ultimately about the horses. And that sets him apart from a lot of other ego kind of driven trainers. It's never about him. And ultimately that 100 winners, as much as he'll have a quiet moment to reflect on it, I think in the overall scheme of things for him, it's neither here nor there.
MV Magnier, who's going to be, you would expect in the future, if not already the present, the public face of Coolmore, John and Sue's son and Vincent's grandson. Just a lovely quote from MV. He's a very nice guy, I have to say that. And it's unusual in sport sometimes where you have flawed geniuses or people that are inscrutable. And I know you talk about maybe Aidan being hard to know, but he's so civil and everybody he treats the same, I find anyway, in any dealings I've had with him or any observations I've had with him, he is a gentleman.
That's one of the best traits that anyone can have in life. And we're probably 99% of us are guilty at some point or another of treating people differently, depending on their stature or depending on whether or not they annoy you or just depending on your mood that day. And that's the thing, you know, with Aidan that you're alluding to there, JD. He's a very, very decent person. And if there were a guy at the race course begging as you enter the race course, Aidan O'Brien will have time for him. He'll have time for, the prince from Dubai or whatever, the same. And he's an incredibly, incredibly humble person. Doesn't wear his wealth, and who knows how wealthy he is, doesn't wear that at all. He really is a person who must have been very well brought up, because he's you know, and there are, God knows, there are many people in racing who are basically up their own backsides, and they wouldn't look sideways at you if you were, you know, of a lesser class, so to speak. Aidan has never been, ever been like that. And any time I've asked him for a little favour, he's absolutely done it. And it's not that we'd be close in any way, but he would go out of his way to help you. He's helped out many, many jockeys in the past who would have fallen on difficult times in their lives through this reason or that. He's helped them out by giving them work in Ballydoyle. And he's really, really true to that kind of idea that you treat people the same, regardless of whether they're the top of the tree or they're basically on the bottom of the class system in this world. And that's an amazing trait to have, and it's absolutely something he will always have.
And Joseph O'Brien, his son, has had a great week as well over at Royal Ascot. Four winners as we record this, Johnny.
Yeah, quite incredible. I mean, I didn't actually count since, but I was counting from the first 3 days. He had 21 runners, so it's like pretty much a runner a race at Royal Ascot. It's really mind-blowing. You know, some races he way more runners than his dad, for example. And I don't know where you start with Joseph. He's gotten kind of new owners into the yard now. He's teaming up with some big owners. He still has, you know, still has an operation on the flat, JD, that, or on the over jumps, that he kind of still is able to kind of keep on top of. And he's had an incredible week. He went there, as I say, numerically he was obviously strong. He's had a lot of horses run well that didn't win. Enchiladas won under Ryan Moore yesterday, tens into sevens. King of Clon was a mad one. I mean, King of Clon under Billy Lucknan in the Windsor Castle, not stable first string at all. Really remarkable performance. I thought Limestone was very well trained for his victory. He's been a horse, I was taken by him when he won in Mallow. I thought his attitude was great two runs back, but you might remember I really fancied a horse against him at Navan recently. He beat him, and he keeps on improving. And Joseph, you know, he's a lot more, I suppose he comes across in interviews as a lot more like his dad than Dunica. There are obvious traits. I mean, if you introduce somebody to them who'd never seen either of them before and you showed him two interviews, I mean, he'd know straight away that they're father and son. But he seems to be very, very ambitious. Another guy that's kind of hard to get a handle on, I find, you know, he's very much his father's son, seems intensely driven, teetotal, I think, like his dad. Everything's about the horses, and what a week he's having. It's not over yet either, JD.
I'm thinking of great sports stars in the world, and to me, are you at the top of your game? Can you do it worldwide? Are you consistent? Do you pull it out of the fire when maybe you shouldn't? And Ryan Moore has all of that, and I just think he is one of, if like, he's as good as Lester Piggott. Like, the ride on Scandinavia, I've seen that so many times. Ryan Moore did it again. And to me, he's right up there with Leicester, who had 116 Ascot winners. Aidan's got 17 to beat Leicester. But Ryan Moore, I can't think of any more superlatives. I just think he is different class to everybody else in that saddle.
Yeah, and I guess when I get into racing, JD, I went through a phase. I got into racing by basically getting an interest in having a bet in the bookies during college. I'd no interest in racing before. I was about the age of 19 or 20, we'll say. And when I went to America when I was 15, prior to that, I had no interest in nationalism or you know, the Republican struggle or any of that stuff. But I watched Michael Collins when I was 15 in the States, and being homesick that's 6 or 7 weeks I was in the States, I really got into like nationalism and all of that. And the whole Irish-English kind of sporting divide has kind of fascinated me ever since. And I've for as long as I'm into racing, I do love an axis that's an Englishman and an Irishman in racing. And we've seen that with Leicester and obviously with Vincent O'Brien. And we've seen it, and we see it now with Harry Cobden and JP McManus. But I do love, I love that in racing, I always think in racing, Irish horsemen and women and British horsemen, men and women, they're very, very similar. Like, there's very little to divide us. Like, when I meet racing journalists from Britain, I feel they're very much the same as us. They just kind of, they get it, like, and we have this thing going on, and you have this fascinating dynamic between these two compelling characters, one Englishman in Ryan Moore and one Irishman in Aidan O'Brien. And I completely agree. I think both are as good as it gets, really, and they're quite unique individuals. Ryan Moore is loath to give any interviews. He's the absolute antithesis to Frankie Dettori. And what you see with Ryan is what you get. What you see with Frankie is what you get in front of the camera. Totally different characters. Ryan just doesn't really, he's not that bothered about giving interviews. It's all about riding the horse for him. Another man who's had a young family, very much a family man, an absolute no-nonsense character. And I just feel, you know, you can define a jockey, JD, by a few things. One is riding on the big occasion. There's a lot more pressure on it. So here, Dylan Brown McMonagall alluded to this on Ethical Diamond in the Breeders' Cup last year. And I was thinking of, you know, your heart rate monitor, how you'd monitor a jockey's heart rate before a race. He said his heart was pounding before the Breeders' Cup. It wasn't borne out in making a mistake. But jockeys riding in big races, obviously, there's a lot more pressure, way more pressure. And Ryan Moore, that just never seems to be a thing with him. He very rarely gets it wrong. I felt with Scandinavia, this was just racing at its at everything about it, because Scandinavia had never run over this trip before, and for that sort of 2 or 3 seconds, as you know, Trawlerman's getting the better of him, you're like, will he stay? And then that moment, you know, he's going to get there by a head, and it just kind of, everything about that ride was superb for Ryan Moore. He was able to preserve the horse's energy. He's a straightforward enough horse ride, but he was also able to get into a brilliant position throughout the race. Thankfully, he had a helper in Oisin Murphy's mount, who went up and kind of gave him another horse to get a toe into the race. But he didn't lead until pretty much the last sort of dying strides of that race, which is some going over 2.5 miles on a hot favourite. And Ryan, if you ask Ryan, again, very much like Aidan, if you ask Ryan about that ride, you know, that was a hell of a ride. He'd play it down. It's not about like filling yourself up with self-praise or anything like that. It's about doing the right thing and basically doing your talking on the racetrack like the horses should do. And what a ride. And he's obviously had a great week, but that for me was nearly as good as it gets. And that dynamic between the pair, like, let it not be underestimated how important Ryan Moore has been for Aidan O'Brien, because, you know, Aidan O'Brien went through a lot of jockeys who left in sort of somewhat acrimonious circumstances. You know, you had You had, for a while, you had Mick Kinnan, you had Kieran Fallon, you had Jamie Spencer, like, not all successful, massively, massively pressurised job. Ryan didn't have to come over, he didn't have to relocate to Ireland, he still lives in England and all that, but rides an awful lot in Ireland now, so he's constantly kind of riding in Ireland, doesn't have to ride out in Ballydoyle very often or anything like that, but the dynamic between that pair is massive, and the words of Aidan O'Brien that he you know, spoke about Ryan after the race, the peach of a ride that he gave him, he definitely meant that.
You talk about the pressure of being a jockey there, and Billy Lochnan is only 20. So I was reading the quotes after Bo Echo pipped Gestad to win the St. James's Palace Stakes on Tuesday. And Billy kind of held his hands up about the ride he gave Bo Echo. They won, but it might not have been the best ride he'd ever given a horse. So I quite admire the maturity from Billy about that.
Yeah, it's Billy the kid, really. Like, he's just that. I don't know. I mean, you look at Ronan Whelan winning the Derby last week, and Ronan Whelan still seems the sort of 16 or 17 year old I met half his life ago. And Billy Lochnan looks like a kid that it's, you know, if you're to do an AI face generation of him in 20 years' time, there'd be very little difference. He just has that fresh face about him. He's smiling. You know, he's from a racing background. Imagine if every kid had a trainer who basically put him or her on horses very early in life, and how many of them would make it. So Billy had that through his dad, and I feel this kid is bound for the top, and I'd actually agree with him on Bo Echo. I thought the horse got him out of trouble a little bit, but this is why racing is so compelling, because on the Newmarket Guineas form he will beat Gestad, but the race didn't work out well for Bo Echo at all. I was very worried, like I ended up not backing him now, but I was worried if I had backed him I would have been worried almost throughout, because he burnt up so much gas early in the race. But for a jockey to come across and say that afterwards, for me, like some people who are particularly brilliant in their sphere, part of it is almost never thinking that they're fallible, or, like, you know, it's you'll often meet professional punters, JD, who almost they're very low to admitting they were wrong. It's like, but the result went against me, but my logic was perfectly honest. I prefer somebody who's honest to the point of saying it wasn't my best ride, but ultimately they won, and that's what matters. So I think Billy is a humble guy who's destined for greatness as well.
Ambon's won pretty much straightforward, though, back to back in the Prince of Wales Stakes, first time that's happened in 31 years. I mean, it is his optimum, that trip and that course for Ombudsman.
Yeah, and like, I was very sweet on Whirly Tray in the race. But I suppose when you look back afterwards,
Mini Hawk,
Mini Hawk, I was very sweet in her each way, running against Darius at the prices. I spoke about this last week. I felt that, you know, on that ground it was going to be there should at least not be much between them on the arc running, and I felt that Mini Hawk got back to form, basically. You know, Aidan O'Brien spoke about afterwards, she's probably an out and out mile and a half horse, and she kind of raced a bit like that, a race in which there were two pace setters really who set it up in a sort of unsatisfactory fashion, but Ombudsman, in terms of good to firm and 10 furlongs, he was just much the best horse in the race. I didn't think Darius really performed on that ground, and Mini Hawk probably just wasn't quite fast enough over the mile and two. For all that she gave a good account, Ombudsman was brilliant. Would love to see him in the Champion Stakes in Leopardstown.
You ever been at a race and table quiz, Johnny?
I have once. There's a famous one in Carlow in the Lord Bagnell every year. I was on one with Tyrone Malloy one year and a couple of other characters. It was great crack. Like, you understand then how some people, the likes of Ryan McGilligan and Martin Murphy working for HRI, how good they are at these games. But so once it was great crack actually.
Harbour Master 1997 was Aidan O'Brien's first Royal Ascot winner. So there's one for the Table Quiz Sharks.
I read that today, Brian O'Connor's report in the Irish Times. I read that because Harbour Master, when I was in starting off in life post college, I lived in the IFSC for a time, and the Harbour Master was
skinny
the local
chips,
pub,
Johnny, so. Skinny chips.
Good. There we go. It wasn't my type of local, but it was kind of, you know, the IFSC is quite a unique place. But of course, the brainchild of Charlie Hawley, who loved horses as well. But a long time ago, Harbour Master. How many years is he going to train more winners for? It could be another 30.
Yeah, let's hope so. And that's the kind of assessment of Royal Ascot so far this week. We're going to look at Saturday's cards, including the Ulster Derby Down Royal. But we'll look at the big one on Saturday, Johnny, Royal Ascot, the Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes, 6 furlongs, Group 1, 19 runners. The going, as we record this, good to firm. But, I mean, rain could be in the atmosphere as well. I found this very difficult there's a load of, like, I'm just going to look at through the odds here for it, because it's a tricky one to work out. 3:40 on Saturday, the group one, the only group one of the card. Jody Starr coming over from Australia, 9-4. Satono Rev, who was second in the race last year, with Ryan Moore now riding 9-2. Overpass third the other day, 10-1. Lake Forest, money for William Haggis' horse into 10s. Sajir is 12-1 alongside Comanche Brave, a recent winner at the Curra. Flora Bermuda was third in this last year, 14-1. Then Kyle of Blue, 16-1. Lugal, 16s and 25-1 bar. There is money for Time for Sandals, who's been way out of form, but into 25-1 in places. That's the one attracting support. We'll obviously get Sam Norris's views on it. But when I was looking to narrow it down here, 19 runners, I narrowed it down to 6.
Yeah, and best of luck with that. I always remember, JD, I was doing spotlights for the Racing Post, and I said one day, and there was a Curra handicap, and I said, this can be an hour down with confidence, with reasonable confidence, to 4 horses. None of them finished in the first 4. So after that, I said, I'm never doing this again. And you can have days where you're just like, never, I think in a horse race, never be too, definitive about something that's definitely going to happen, or say things that aren't borne out by the fact that they are horses, and you're just going to get bad luck stories. And you're just going to get days where horses just don't perform, and such is life or whatever. This race is the second of the sprint races, the top class sprint races of the week, and intriguingly, the first one, which was the King Charles III Stakes on Tuesday, all the way back to Tuesday now, was won by Mission Central, trained by Aidan O'Brien, a 3-year-old trained by Aidan O'Brien. So maybe we've a reasonable time of it in Ireland now with sprinters. That probably remains to be seen. But Mission Central, who was, he was sent off a big enough price. He was probably
14 say he had some control. Yeah,
yeah. Like it's something of an each way chance in the race. But it's basically the same price here that Dunica's horse is in this race, and Comanche Brave. Now I turned off on my. The Racing Post changed their they've changed their app recently, but I turned off showing me the price history, because I'm put off putting up horses who are basically a lot bigger of a price, and for some reason I've turned it back on there in the last day or two. Comanche Brave was 40-1, was available at 40-1 post declarations for this race, as far as I can see. So at 12 or 14-1, obviously I'm a little bit reluctant, but having said that, and Ryan Moore did ride him the last time, so he's deserts him. I thought that was a brilliant effort when he beat Big Gossie at the Curra the last day, JD. He was a horse who had an unusual profile, because he'd been running over a mile last year as a 3-year-old. It kind of looked like he stayed a mile, but maybe it was just class that was getting him through. He then ran behind the best sprinter in the world in Haying Rising and Raging Blizzard, who reopposes at Sha Tin. But there was a massive gamble on him at the Curra. And when I say massive gamble, the markets aren't like what they were. He was really well backed. He was something like 5-1 into 7-4, and he smashed Big Gossie and everything else that day. He really looked like a sprinter that was on the up. And Dunica O'Brien admitted afterwards, I wasn't sure myself what this horse's trip was, and maybe they found it now. I felt he was an absolute revelation that day. I mean, I'm not going to go telling you I know about all these horses, like horses from all over the world in terms of sprinting, but this horse is good, and I will massively be cheering him on here for Ireland Comanche Brave, and I definitely feel he's a chance.
Yes, I agree with you, and Dunica O'Brien very excited by him and might have found the horse's correct trip. Looking through the others, Lake Forest, need to have his wits about him, over 6. He'd been running over further. He did win a big race in Australia in the past. He's been gelded. A Kind of Blue, course and distance winner as a 3-year-old in a Group 1. Disappointing last season, but showed some of his old ability. Second in a Group 2 at York on his first start of 2026. Overpass was third the other day, as we know, the Group 1 winning sprinter in Australia. And he has some form with other horses, including Jody Starr, who is the favourite. So if you like Jody Starr, I wouldn't rule out Overpass, who was ahead of Jody Starr in a race last year. Lugada is a Japanese rider, not been seen since second in a Group 1 at Maidan in March. That was over 6 and beat last year's winner of this race, Lazat, on that day. Sagir is in form, won a Chantilly last time out. This is the Planet Group winner at Deauville over the distance last year as a contender for Sheen Murphy. And Santono Rev, as we said, second last year, a Japanese horse. But will Ryan Moore make the difference this time? So plenty of contenders, Johnny.
It's funny, Roy, last was a long week, but I recall you messaging me on Tuesday morning saying this Rijevka could be a star. This is the Graffar trained French horse, and this is before the other sprint, the King Charles. This is why Royal Ascot is basically without any sort of rivals as far as I'm concerned. Ireland and Britain jumps are flat, because you have an Irish horse beating a French horse beating an Aussie horse in a sprint at Royal Ascot. That's absolutely incredible. Like, you rarely get good French sprinters, you very rarely get good Irish sprinters, so it's good to see how you know, compelling the sprinting division has been of Royal Ascot this week. And often you get horses running in both races. As you say, we're having it again this year. I remember Choisir and Oasis Dream 23 years ago or so, when they used to lock horns in these races, and you'd be trying to do the double, having one on the Tuesday. And this is a brilliant race over the six.
So you think you're going to go for Comanche Brave each way at 14 to 1.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for Santono Rev with Ryan Moore, the king of the world, at 4 to 1. The other one I looked at as well is the first race on Saturday, the Norfolk Stakes over 5 furlongs, group 2 for 2-year-olds. I love these 2-year-old races, 21 runners, 2:30. But there is a lot of guessing around it. Just going to go through the odds for this one on Saturday at Royal Ascot, 2:30, the Norfolk. We have Carry the Flag, Ryan Moore, Aidan O'Brien, 9-4. Orthodox is a 11-2 shot, Flight Signal 13-2, then 10-1 Bar Trebecca and Estina for Wesley Ward, I believe, the United States trainer who's got 3 in the race, all fillies. Where Love Lives is 12-1, as is Force Noir. Star Prospect for Dylan Brown McMonagall has been backed between 11 and 16-1. And Fanshawe Beach, oh, when I was looking this morning, had attracted a bit of money, as did Mr. McCartney. You can get between 40 and 80-1, depending on who you're shopping with. But obviously, you should be shopping with Hills. What do you think about this one, Johnny? This Norfolk will be a sprint. You need to be out of the stalls pretty quick.
I mean, there are millions of narratives to this race, like through the years running in the Magna colours for Wesley Ward, who loves coming over to Royal Ascot, and won a 2-15 in the blinkers last time, more or less making the run. And I guess if you have blinkers on as a sprinter, it's... you know, it's probably normal enough. A hood for a sprinter isn't as normal, and that's what Aidan O'Brien has reverted to in the well-named New Yorker, which obviously is a lot closer to Wesley Ward's neck of the woods. But I'm going to give this horse one more chance, JD, because he has been a complete head the ball, really, since he won at Dundalk in terrible conditions. He was 4-7 at Dundalk in April, and that day, I think that was Aidan's first 3-year-old winner of the year, and they were already talking in about Royal Ascot. He was obviously well touted, son of no name ever. The next day behind Velozzi at the Curra, never settled at all, and then at Naas in a race in which Star Prospect was third, so they reopposed. That was, as 5 furlong races go, that was very, very messy, and he didn't really settle, missed the break and all of that, didn't run too badly, but he's a hood on. And just I do feel it's interesting that Aidan O'Brien comes here with him, because they could have kind of half given up on him at this stage, but the fact of coming over, he's a big price for me, is very interesting. Another narrative here in terms of owners is Amo Racing, and Force Noir has switched from Robson O'Gare, who did or didn't have a falling out with Kia Jorbashane, depending on who you talk to, but some of the horses have left, including Force Noir, and he has a chance, but so does the runner that Robson has in the race for Kia, who is Tribeca, who's by Blue Point, who's a brilliant record at Royal Ascot, and this horse looked very good at Navan when he won a race that's working out really, really well. The obvious starting point in the race is Aidan's first string in the race, Carried the Flag, was second to the Coventry winner, Great Barrier Reef, at the Curra last time, but you're probably not going to get much value because of how obvious that form has worked out.
So what are you going for?
I'm going with New Yorker at the prices. This is one now. I'm happy to be made, you know, look a fool by a horse at 25-28-1, but this horse almost certainly has way more ability than he's shown since he won on debut.
Social Symbols 33-1 won a Rip and Maiden over the distance on debut earlier this month. William Buick rides, I thought, was one of the more interesting ones each way at a price. We have got Sam Norris and William Hill on the line. How are you, Sam?
Hi, chaps. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Yourselves?
Not too bad. Thank you, Sam. Hope you've had a good week. What has been the highlight for you so far, Royal Ascot?
I mean, obviously, it was a pulsating finish to the Gold Cup yesterday, wasn't it? You know, to see two really good horses like that put daylight between themselves and the rest of the field. The fact that Trollerman was coming there without a prep run, he was carrying a little bit of condition in the parade ring, to have ran as well as he did against a horse who's obviously been expertly prepared for this race in Scandinavia, trod that well-trodden path that Aidan O'Brien has taken with his Gold Cup horses in the past. I thought that, you know, that was just really special and obvious highlight to see the two of them pull well clear. Elsewhere, Joseph O'Brien, I'm a big fan of Joseph O'Brien, like a lot of people are. He's had a great week. He unleashed a two-year-old on debut earlier on the week, a son of Justify called On Just Terms, who ran really well. He was the subject of a bit of a morning move with us. He drifted back out come race time. He finished second. He looked, you know, a definite horse for the notebook going forward. So I think he'll win a race for sure. Maho Bay was a bit unfortunate in the Hampton Court yesterday. I was impressed with Bo Echo in the St. James's. Thought he'd win. Thought things probably conspired against him early on. So he was impressive, but hard not to love what we saw from Scandinavia and Trawlerman yesterday.
What gave you the biggest hammering? Where did you get the most pain?
Scandinavia wasn't a great result. You know, bizarrely, everybody thought that the 50-1 winner of the Queen Anne 10 Bob Tony, everyone was like, oh, that'll be a good result for you. That'll be a good result for you. It knocks out a couple of multiples, but he was the worst result in the book for us, 10 Bob Tony, in the singles market. So even with a 50-1 shot in the Queen Anne, that probably gave us the most pain just because people assume it was a bookie-friendly result, but it really wasn't.
There's always somebody, Johnny. There's always somebody who knows.
Sorry, JD, just getting my audio back there. There's always somebody who knows. 10 Bob Tony, like you, it's funny. Like I talk to the bookmakers at the track sometimes, and they don't really lay odds on shots that much. People generally don't want to lay odds on shots, and when you get a name like that, 10 Bob Tony, and there's a bit of a Tony in it, at 50-1, you know, I've a mate whose wife is called D, and there's a D horse that he's backing today on the basis of the name at 66-1. So that's why 10 Bob Tony maybe wasn't such a surprise result. But how has turnover been, Sam? It looks like. I know they were saying On Course was kind of quiet on the Wednesday, but I'd say it's been pretty good.
Yeah, it hasn't been bad at all turnover-wise. Obviously, you've got the fact that we've got a major football tournament taking place at the moment. There's a golfing major this week as well. So punters' eyes are kind of drawn in a lot of different levels. But yeah, turnover hasn't been too bad. I think we're slightly ahead of expectations of where we wanted to be. The problem, Johnny, from our point of view, is the margin. The gross win is not where we want it to be just yet. So fingers crossed we can improve that.
So let's just start then on Royal Ascot on Saturday, Sam. The big one, which we've already profiled, has been the Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes. Jodie Starr, 2-1 favourite. What are you looking at market-wise for this?
Yeah, we're trying to get the first two in the book, actually. Jolly Star 2-1 and Sasono Red 4-1. Not saying that they can't win, but we feel that the market's probably got the pair of them short enough. They're obviously both trying to escape the shadow of Ka Yin Rising coming here for the easier pickings, as it were. But we think we can probably take the pair of them on. Elsewhere, we're pretty keen to keep Powerful Glory on side for Richard Fahey and Jamie Spencer, but this has already been nibbled at 28-1 into 22-1, but he is a horse that we'll try and keep if we can. He won the sprint race here on Champions Day last autumn on ground that was quicker than usual for that meeting, so you'd think that conditions tomorrow are really going to suit him. So he would be the one that we would try and keep on side, Powerful Glory. I expect Cardem, even at a huge price, to probably have his backers again as a two-time previous winner of this race. Punters who, you know, I recognise the name, enjoyed success with him in the past. I mean, the form isn't really there, Cardem. You wouldn't be surprised if he bounces back at this track. It's a typically tough sprint. And in most of these sprint races, we think we can get the front end of the market beat. So that's what we're going to try and do. But Powerful Glory, probably the one that the lads in the trading room are pretty keen on.
Star Prospect seems to be attracting a bit of money for the Norfolk Stakes, Sam, the first race on Royal Ascot Saturday.
Yeah, again, it's a place where we always feel like we can get a result in. I mean, Charles Darwin won this last year at 8-13. But before that, the winners were 12-1, 150-1, 50-1, and 14-1. So, yeah, layers always feel like we can maybe get a result here. You bang on the money with Star Prospect. You know, we've seen each way support for him. Not a huge surprise. We've kind of already touched on the wonderful week that Joseph O'Brien's having. We know he can train absolutely any type of animal. I mean, he obviously beat Carry the Flag on debut. So that's another big tick in the box for him. Carry the Flag's going to come into this as a favourite, as a horse that will need to get beat. He beats Sun Goddess, who obviously runs it in the Albany on Friday's card, could boost the form. Was second behind Great Barrier Reef. That form has already been boosted. But yeah, Star Prospect is is the one that, that they nibbled at. And I thought Underdog, if you wanted an underdog in this race, he might fit the bill. He's 33-1. He's only 8 days on from his Sandown success, but he was a ready enough winner that day. He lost a shoe in the race as well, so probably a performance, or lost a shoe going down to post, sorry, as he ran without one. But you could maybe upgrade it a little more. Thought he was quite interesting in a massive price underdog in a race that we're going to go four places as standard, and with the monster field, the each way extra terms are all the way up to eight. So he interested me a little bit, but Star Prospect could well continue the good week for Joseph O'Brien. At the moment, though, if we can get the favourite beat, Carry the Flag, that'll be a good result.
Yeah, well said, Underdog there. The 3:05 at Ascot Saturday, the Hardwick Stakes, 1.5 miles. We mentioned Ethical Diamond earlier. That runs, as does a lot of our old favourites, Lamburn, Jan Bruegel, Kalpana, Sam.
Yeah, it looks as though it's going to be an interesting renewal again. This is where our epic boost is going to go. It's going to be live at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. They never let me tell punters exactly what it is before it goes live, but it's Kalpana themed, I can tell you that. So if you fancy Kalpana, you want to check back with us from 9 a.m. Tomorrow morning for the epic boost. She's up there at 9-4, won on a comeback run when probably half fit last time around. She's got a great Ascot record, surely will have tightened up for that run. Goliath's actually been the best backed with us so far, 11-2 from 6-1. Now, he has got Ascot winning form. Won the King George and Queen Elizabeth a couple of years ago. He's been globe-trotting. He's taken in some major races around the world. Francis Graffard's had an up-and-down week. He had a win on the first day. Obviously, it wasn't to be with Dariz. He's fired a lot of ammunition at the meeting this year. Christophe Soumillon booked. So at the moment, Goliath, 11-2 from 6-1, is probably the best backed in the race. But as you guys mentioned, Ethical Diamond, he was high up on my list as well. Obviously, won the Duke of Edinburgh here last year. I mean, you wouldn't mind owning him, would you, lads? He's taking you to Cheltenham, to Royal Ascot, to the Ebor, which he won, to Maidan, to the Breeders' Cup, where he won. Phenomenal horse.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the money, I don't think, to own Ethical Diamond. But Johnny,
between the three of us, might we be able to buy a leg?
No, I don't think so. Johnny, what you like in the Hardwick?
We would have been able, between the three of us, to afford what he cost after he won in Limerick when he moved to Willie Mullins. I was there that night, and I'm looking at this now. That was on the 24th of June. I'm recording this from Limerick before racing, so there was probably this meeting, or if not this meeting, very, very close to it. He won. He was with Mick O'Mara, who's, I think, trains Tipperary direction, and he was bought obviously with a view to doing good dual purpose things for Willie Mullins. His next three runs, right, beaten 33 lengths, sixth, beaten 51 lengths, then he was second at Leopardstown and fourth at Royal Ascot, and look what he's done since. Like, I actually fancy him in this race at the prices. I'd be totally with Hills taking on Kalpana here. I mean, I was definitely keen to take her on at Newbury the last day. In fairness, I think she was good that day and will come on for that run, but she's taking on good horses here. Like, I'm not exactly sure, like, am I massively solid in any of them? Jan Bruegel, for me, I'd be wary of him after I thought he was pretty lifeless at Epsom the last day. For all that he finished second, I thought it took him a long time to get going. Lamburn is limited enough for me, but Ethical Diamond, he's been brilliant on good to firm ground, loves the meeting. I plenty of positives at the price for me. Be massively against Kalpana as favourite.
The Jersey Stakes, 4:20, Ascot Saturday, 7 furlongs, and this is tough again for punters. What, 17 runners? Anything catching your eye, Sam?
Yeah, Sailor's Drive makes the market at 9-4. I know he posted a really good figure on his sole start last year at Redcar when he won. He came back this year and he was a bit of a negative in the market, really, at Newmarket. It didn't stop him winning. So very interested in him at 9-4. He is the favourite. The each way nibbles so far, not enough to make us change the price dramatically, but the two chief threats for Godolphin, Catullus of Charlie Appleby and William Bewick, 10-1 into 9-1. Obviously, the big question mark is the Appleby form at the Royal Meeting. It's been another kind of quietish year, really, for them. I know Godolphin have had success, but he's been in the care of John Gosden. And John Gosden and Godolphin team up with Morris Dancer in this race as well, who's 14-1 from 16-1. So little nibbles on the two of them, but I think a lot conspired against Sabre Strike last time around. So look, even though he's pretty short, isn't he, 9-4 in a big field race like the Jersey, I think he's probably an exciting horse to go forward. And William Haggis has been in form pretty much from the get-go this season. He's having a tremendous year. I think early on in the season a lot of his horses were a bit further forward than they ever used to be. I don't know if they've kind of changed some of the regime or something at home, but they've just been in form for a long time now. So Sabre Strike, he does look an exciting horse there, but a little bit each way has been laid in another extra place race on the Godolphin.
4:33 on Saturday, the Down Royal Ulster Derby, the feature race. The odds are up from William Hill, Johnny Murgus, Serator, 9-2 favourite, Harmani, 5-1, Bay of Stars, and Wyman also 5-1 shots, Huff and Puff and New Zealand both 17-2. Shazaloza 10-1, Trojan Fighter 12s, Pierre Gross 14s, and Mad Bad and Dangerous 18-1. Do you have any view?
Yeah, and just to mention on Sabre Strike there, Extremely Zane landed a gamble. He's a three-year-old horse trained by Haggis, who was actually running in a handicap at York last Saturday, but that gives him some sort of an angle. I thought he was brilliant at Newmark the last day. I really don't feel the Irish are up to a lot in that race, which would be a little bit unusual. So I'd be very much with him as a home trained favourite in that race in Jersey tomorrow. The race at Down Royal, this is the big flat race for the meet. They have the Ulster Oaks and the Ulster Derby. Aidan Offton unveils a lot of mile and a half races for these sort of 3-year-olds at the moment. Aidan Offton unveils quite a good horse in the Ulster Derby, who's well handicapped. I remember telling, I can't remember which William Hill trader was, but I said if I would be amazed if New Zealand went off favourite at Navan the last day. In fairness to him, he was actually running behind Limestone. To me, it looked like he wouldn't necessarily get the trip. They've changed the headgear now. I wouldn't be giving up on him necessarily, but Bay of Stars, who's fives with Hills, he just looks the most solid in the race. His run at Leopardstown off 80 the last day was perfectly good. It was a good start to handicapping. He was behind just in front of Eniac, who ran okay last night, sort of half solidified the form, and he just looks a very, very solid 5-1 each way chance in a pretty open renewal of the Ulster Derby.
Okay, it's time for Johnny Ward's charity bet in the racing pod this week. Johnny, you've 25 each way or 50 on the nose. What are you going for?
Yeah, funnily enough, it's in Royal Ascot in a race that we haven't discussed yet, and I am really intrigued as to see how the betting goes. And this is the last race of the entire festival, JD. I don't know. I don't believe in getting out stakes. You shouldn't be getting out from Anton. But if it is your sort of proverbial getting out stakes, A Piece of Heaven is a lovely, lovely horse, I feel, in the nightcap at Royal Ascot. Willie Mullins is almost expected to win this race. I wouldn't be mad at all on Ledestri at the prices. I actually feel Willie could have some other interesting horse in the race. Mr. Hollywood at a big price under that, and Billy the Kid. Billy Lucknan, he's really interesting on his flat form going back in Germany. But A Piece of Heaven, I followed him since he was with Aidan Fitzgerald. I remember him doing me a good turn at Gore, and that's a long time ago. It took him a while to get going now, but he was brilliant at Chester, loves fast ground. Dylan Brown McMonagall said he was always going to win more or less that day. That brings him up to rate him 105. He will stay, a lot of these won't.
Each way or on the nose, Johnny?
On the nose.
There you go. The charity bet this week on the racing pod, and gamble responsibly, folks, if you're going to have a punt at home. The 6:10 at Royal Ascot, the last race of the week, the Queen Alexandra Stakes, 7-1, A Piece of Heaven, to send Johnny Ward to heaven, 50 on the nose at 7-1. Sam Norris, thanks so much.
Cheers, lads, thank you.
Johnny, thank you.
Cheers, JD.
That was the Racing Pod for this week. Remember, folks, the Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. We'll speak next Friday. Look forward to having your company then.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think it's going to be the greatest atmosphere at any boxing event I've ever witnessed. You know, certainly in my lifetime. And I'm so pleased for her as well.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.